This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. The iconic donut chain Krispy Kreme has something of a cult status, with people flocking to their stores to get a fresh, warm, melt-in-your-mouth yeast donut. There are Krispy Kreme stands and small shops, but a real Krispy Kreme store, the kind that gets people lining up, has the whole production line in view of customers and shows the glazed donuts coming out of the fryer. It's experiential in its own way, but the chain, based in North Carolina, wanted to really amplify the brand and experience for its new flagship store in New York, in Times Square. It opened recently and it may be the most ambitious, experience-driven QSR operation on the planet. There are giant LED visuals outside, because it's Times Square. But inside, there are stacked video walls for branding and promotion, digital menu displays, interactive tables, and a scheduled projection mapping show called Donut Theater. I spoke with Todd Hoffman, the digital lead on the 4,500 square foot flagship store. Hi, Todd. Thanks for joining me. Your company, Krispy Kreme, recently launched something in New York City in Times Square. Can you tell me what that experience is all about and why it happened?
Sure. It's an opportunity for an iconic brand to make a big statement out there. Times Square being the kind of crossroads of the world was a great place to kind of plant a flag. I guess mm-hmm. We're in 32 countries with about 1,400 shops. And, it was time to put a big stake in the ground and say something major for the brand. We do plan a big rollout starting in 2021. Also, we're coming to New York in a big way. So Times Square just made sense.
So New York is the home of, not the home, but there's a lot of Dunkin' Donuts there and a few Tim Hortons. So Krispy Kreme wasn't really present in the market?
We had a shop in Penn Station. And years ago, we had more shops, but we decided strategically that this was where we wanted to expand. And this year, we rolled out four shops even before Times Square. We've got a couple more coming at the end of the year. And then kind of entering into the Dwayne Reed's of the world to kind of expand our reach even further.
This one in Times Square, it's the whole nine yards where you're doing all the production right there, and people can walk in and see what's going on, the whole theater piece of it.
Absolutely, 4,500 square feet, so it's a big shop for us. We make donuts 24/7, so that's why we have a hut light that's always on top of the roof.
And these are not regular donuts; these are the I forget what the term is, but they're the really gooey, melt in your mouth ones.
Yeah. We call them OGs, original glazed, but they're yeast donuts that take an hour to make from beginning to end. And we have a machine that can do 270 dozen an hour.
Mm-hmm. So this location is filled with technology inside and out. I mean, You see this big LED screen as you're approaching it. Of course, it's one of a gazillion LED screens in Times Square, but can you kind of walk through everything that was done and the thinking behind it?
Sure. Sight lines were huge. We're at 48th and Broadway, and the goal is to be seen from 40th Street all the way up to 55th. That's where we have the world's largest hut light on the roof, 15 feet, about 8,000 pounds. That will be lit, and truly you can see it from an even longer distance. We're using lights that are typically used on airport runways. So that's kind of one of the big pieces. We have a wraparound billboard that's 110 feet by about 35. And then under that, we have a ribbon of LED screens where basically you can see donuts just like they're on our conveyor scrolling, and we could also put any kind of other messaging. So that's kind of trying to hit it hard from a distance. Everything we did, we wanted to stand out in the crowd. Everybody there wants to stand out in the crowd. But I think we do, especially with something as simple as our big red hot light just rotating slowly. With the pandemic, that became somewhat of a beacon of hope and optimism. Who doesn't like donuts? And even the opening of shops throughout the year, while other people might have been closing shops and contracting, we've gone full speed ahead.
Mm. And I believe this store was originally going to open earlier in the year, but then, you know, New York kind of went into lockdown and that delayed it a little bit.
It did. But mid-July, when, you know, we're right in Times Square, and Times Square was at 10% of its normal traffic. The decision was made that, you know, it was important for us internally and we felt New York externally to stay on track and open mid-September. And, by the time we opened, let's say Times Square was at 30 to 40% of its kind of average traffic. But we still hit our records anyway. So word got out.
So when you say records, in terms of record sales, foot traffic?
Both. Okay. For an opening day, we hit records. For an opening week, also records. You know, we open on a Tuesday always. And then by Saturday, the word had gotten out to the suburbs and to New Jersey. You know, we had a big day on Tuesday, but an even bigger day on Saturday and then Sunday.
And you kind of need sales records there because the cost of rent in Times Square is a couple of bucks.
It's not like
being out in the suburbs.
No. And this is, you know, profit is always an incentive, but, you know, making a bid statement in Times Square that becomes our marker that we've returned to New York. We're in Harlem, we're in the Bronx, we're down in the financial district, and we're going to open up shops in Brooklyn and Upper West Side.
If you're in Brooklyn and Williamsburg, they'll have to be artisanal.
Yeah. Well, we stick to our roots.
You know, curated yeast donuts.
Yeah. We did introduce our first, let's say, $10 donut, but our Big Apple donut, which is our nod to New York, comes in a beautiful box, candy apple coating, and it's a donut that, you know, we were taking a big risk on, but we sell hundreds and hundreds a day. Big risk, beautiful product, but it seems to have resonated with locals. We thought tourists would buy it, but there are no tourists. Locals seem to have gravitated.
Yeah. Maybe they take it with them, and, well, I guess they're not traveling either. Nobody is.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, well, at some point that'll all change, I'm sure. So the outside, the big LED displays, it's as much a branding statement as it is something that's going to generate foot traffic. Obviously, people are being attracted in. When they walk inside, what do they see?
That's where all of our, razzle-dazzle is, but that's where we've really turned up the heat with digital experiences. And, you know, in the pandemic, where you're not so able to have a full house or give out samples or really have the energy that a room full of people have, the digital served an even greater purpose. Mm-hmm. So when you walk in, you see we've got two video columns facing opposite directions. So you start to see one that's 355-inch screens stacked on each other. So you can see it from the door. The pathway leads right to our, if you know Krispy Kreme, it's all about our donut theater, where we make the donuts, where you watch them march down the line. So the pathway was kind of right to the donuts. And that's where we took the concept of donut theater and Bravo Media and Dave Tuttle's team. To them, it was obvious that we were on Broadway. We should put on a Broadway show. Initially, we were just going to kind of do some corporate information on the back wall and, you know, simple projection. But David really challenged us. And we've got four projectors plus a camera that helps us track individual donuts as they march down the line. And that's all, you know, kind of spectacular visuals for people to kind of whet their appetite. But, you know, we served up every 12 minutes, we have a show that's about 35 seconds long. Huh. Five shows that Bravo created.
And this is on the white tile, subway tile wall behind, like beyond the kind of conveyor that the donuts are moving along, right? And the workers are on the other side of that.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't want it to take people's mind away from the donuts, which is why we only show it every 12 minutes and have these very short, spectacular shows. No words. It's really just spectacular entertainment. And it has brought lots of energy to the room, to the point where our team members, there's a button in the back where you can advance these shows. And, you know, when we feel a low energy in the room, boom, they kind of fire up one of the what we're calling a takeover. And, you know, it's projection on the back wall. They mapped to each individual tile, things that I didn't think somebody could do. And then based on mapping to the tiles, all the different shows, you feel like, you know, the tiles are coming off the wall or sprinkles are coming down out of the ceiling. You know, and then, you know, there's another projector that projects onto our what's called a glazed waterfall. And normally in our shops, it's about 3 inches tall. Here it's 3 feet. You know, just to bring kind of focus on the original glaze. And then there's one that happens kind of serendipitously where, you know, we've got sprinkles on the back wall and it looked beautiful. And then one day the team members just started to poke at the sprinkles as they were exploding on the back wall. And it looks like they're playing a video game, you know, with their hands. So when that takeover comes on, the donut makers stop what they're doing. They turn around and they start popping at the wall. And that has become kind of a really spectacular show that says a lot about, I think, the brand, because we were loose enough to let it go, crazy enough to put all the stuff into our donut theater and then kind of let our team members start to really interact with
it. Is that part of the team member job description that you're required to do this when this particular show comes on, or did that just kind of organically happen?
It organically happened, but now you're required to do it. If you hear the first tone, then, you know, somebody might come off the floor and one of the donut makers in uniform, and they love it. And it's as if they're competing how many sprinkles you can explode in the course of 35 seconds.
Right. So, it's a break in what they're normally doing.
Yeah. So that's kind of our lead in. That's good, whet the appetite. When we first designed the shop, and being Times Square, and being Krispy Kreme, we expected hour-long lines. But the pandemic has changed that, where we're only at about 25% capacity. So we have this donut theater that people can kind of see and whet their appetite. And then they, you know, at the end of it, they're facing that digital column that kind of shows our best, images of donuts, dozens of donuts, coffee, lattes, trying to help them think about what they're about to order before they hit any one of our kind of five display cases. And that, you know, that's what they're there for. That's where the fun starts. How do you fill a box with your favorite donuts?
Right. Did you, you kind of run all the digital for Krispy Kreme, right?
I'm the digital lead. So, yeah. You know, my day job is menu boards. That's what I signed up on. And then kind of what made it the best job in America was being able to do Times Square in the past 9 months. Yep.
Did you, when this, the ideation process was happening for this Times Square store and started floating concepts like Donut Theater, I assume you had to sell that up to, you know, your managers and the executive team, did they kind of go, hell yeah, or did they look at you cross-eyed like, you want to do what?
Yeah. Well, I thought when we decided not to put messaging on the back wall, mm-hmm. that executive leadership would see it as a missed opportunity. But when our CMO, who really is the, you know, he's the one who let Bravo do their stuff, which was, you know, they're a pretty amazing match. When he kind of showed it to the executive team, our head of operations and our president, they just loved it. So the concept, Krispy Kreme as a whole is a very low-key brand, right? We let our product say everything that it needs to say. We don't have an ad budget. Mm-hmm. We change up the donuts a lot, but it's really word of mouth. So we don't brag. And this was a way for us to be on brand, you know, and just entertain and make it a happy place. So where I thought it was crazy, because I'm new to the brand, you know, I grew up in the Northeast and, you know, really was only introduced to it when I started with Krispy Kreme. They were true to form, you know, and it went over, I'd say, very well, you know, across the executive team. And then, you know, they let go and we got to execute.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
Are digital menu boards standard to a Krispy Kreme store?
They are being introduced in every new store, and we're testing it in remodels. So eventually all the remodels will have them. The delicate balance is we don't want people to see technology, right? Mm-hmm. So the name of the game is they see what they need to see. They get the information they want. We whet their appetite with some animation, but we really don't want them to feel like they're looking at TV screen.
Right.
So we've stepped delicately. I'd say we have 15 shops that now have digital menu boards, and then next year we'll do a big expansion. But Times Square was a deviation. You know, it was a project and an aspiration all its own as it related to digital menu boards.
You talked about rollout. Is this a concept that's going to go elsewhere?
The one from, well,
the Times Square Donut Theater thing.
It may, you know, but it wouldn't go. There may be one other location in the U.S. where we go all in the way we did in New York. You might guess where that is. There are other places where we have strong presence, you know, England, Australia, Mexico, that, you know, may merit this kind of flagship shop.
You could do like Leicester Square if you ever went to Dubai, Tokyo, places like that. And I would imagine you're not saying it, but referencing Las Vegas would be the one that would make the most sense. I think the only... No, maybe not.
Nope. Further south from us. Maybe a Disney territory or something.
Ah, all right.
We'll see. Yeah.
The only one I've seen in Las Vegas was in what's the name of the one? It looks like a castle and all that.
I don't remember. I mean, I think we have a presence out there, but it's where, you know, tourists from around the world congregate and are there to have fun and family oriented. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep. So with your standard digital menu boards, have you had any sense of what they do? Do they make a difference operationally or in terms of sales? Or is it just a more efficient way of doing things?
I'd say the pandemic screwed us up because we can't really do comp stores. You know, we've been opening in new shops so that we can't comp to the year before. And then the few remodels we did, we only had a couple months to look at, but we are definitely thinking that it's driving drink You know, we're having beverage attachment. Goal is maybe a higher average check or more dozens. But it's we believe in concept that it is having impact, and the drive through as well. So definitely, our belief that it's worth the investment is growing. But we need more months and we need more comping to kind of confirm that.
Right. You sent me a list of all the various components involved, and there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of people involved. How did all this get pulled together? Because I'm looking at like a dozen vendors, something like that.
Yeah. It started with our design team working with an architect, and Shute Gerdeman, who are, best of the best. They kind of set the stage and put a lot of this activity in there, not knowing how to do it. I don't think they have, much experience doing it, but they could envision what could be done with the digital columns or, projecting in the donut theater or, they helped us take our icons, the icons within an iconic brand, the Hut Light, the donut box, the waterfall, the donut line, and, build on them to the point where, the whole place seems to be theater. So they set the stage. Then we had a major creative shop come in, partnered with a technology lead, which was Electrosonic, and they took the first stab at how do we fill it in with kind of interactive tables and projection in the donut theater and where the menu boards might go and digital columns. But then we took it and we dished it out to specialists in each area. So Stratacache for menu boards. I don't think any other company could have done what we did with these menu boards or any other platform.
Why is that?
We've got three layers of imagery that's on there. We've got an animation, scrolling animation in the middle board. There's three boards together. We've got your basic, POS connected menu board items. And then every 30 seconds, we have these takeovers that wash across the three screens. And it took hours and days for us to, I think we pushed their platform. We pushed the media players that we were using. We pushed SagePath in their creativity. But in time, we were able to kind of get what we wanted because visually it seems simple, but executionally it was really, really big challenge. So, kudos to those guys for sticking in there and giving us the vision that we wanted with the menu board.
Mm-hmm. And Stratacache, at least it would drive through with some of their clients. They're doing things like AI-driven suggestive selling and menu optimization. Are you guys looking at that or doing it?
We will be. They are our shop of record. That's the platform we're going forward with. A lot based on kind of how they presented. We looked at 9 different options for menu boards this year, and Stratacache came out in front, partly due to our aspirations with drive-through. We think we can make more money through drive-through or have a greater impact digitally through drive-through than we can inside the shop. So their expertise in that area, ability to personalize, everybody kind of had some angle on personalization. When they're pitching us, reading license plates, geofencing, what have you. I'd say Stratacache, where they work with for McDonald's and others, gave us the comfort level that they were the ones to go with for the long haul. So we've only done a few shops with them, including Townsquare.
I suspect there's a few vendors who come in and say, yeah, we can do all that. But when you push them on it, whether they've actually ever done it, it's a different story.
There are some great outfits out there. But in terms of the surprise to me, I don't know if you say it on a screen on a radio call. It's one of the few times where I thought best of class was going to be out of our budget, and then when we looked at it, they were right there. So they're affordable and impressive, and continue to impress. But this isn't an ad for Stratacache.
Right. Well, they've done well. The idea of this store, obviously I haven't been there, been anywhere in 6 or 7 months. I wonder about the sensory overload element of it. You've got audio, you've got the theater, you've got the LED displays, you've got all this stuff going on. Is there a balance you have to achieve so that it doesn't become kind of overpowering to people when they walk in there? Or do you just kind of see and know that, okay, I'm going into an attraction?
It sounds like you were listening in on our meetings and some of our great concerns. Definitely leading up to opening, we had to get the sound level for background music correct, And then, with the Donut Theater, there's a light show and sound had to kind of rise, but it couldn't rise so far that people couldn't talk. So there's a lot of nuances, I'd say over the next month, we're going to be doing fine tuning. But I'm happy to say when we opened, we were pretty close to, in our mind, perfect on the balance, but getting team member input, getting guest input is critical. So that's right. What this kind of month, when we fine tune in 30 days, we'll be able to kind of, do our best to kind of make it work. But I don't think there's a feeling that we're over the top with.
Well, you're in Times Square, so.
Yeah.
There's everything else is.
Yeah, there's a lot of leeway. The only place we kind of shout is outside. But
right.
that's where it's fair game. And if you do shout, you don't get heard. So we've kind of tried to whisper with things like the hot light, mm-hmm. just going back in time. It looks like it's been there since the 1950s, even though we just fired it up last Tuesday.
Mm. What's been the response of people coming in?
I have been there for the last 10 days, and I would stop people in Times Square when I saw them kind of sitting at a table, enjoying the donuts. And they say they've been waiting for Krispy Kreme to arrive. We I think got 1,000 pieces of media before we even opened, billions of impressions. So there was a lot of buildup and a lot of anticipation. And, everybody I talked to, which were several dozen, seemed to be happy with kind of what they saw. But
well, if they've ever had a Krispy Kreme donut, of course they're happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it all comes down to this silly little, original glazed donut that's still warm in your hands, what Chris Rock calls a crack. It's just, once you've had one, you can't forget it. Before we returned to New York, you could get them in Penn Station, but they weren't as fresh as they are when we're making it right in the shop.
They'd been shipped in from somewhere else. It's just different when it comes off that line.
Yeah. I mean, they're always made fresh daily, but, when it's been, in the fryer and then through the glaze only seconds ago, it's quite a treat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Technology is being applied in some retail environments to manage access control and capacity control. I'm guessing you didn't have to really do that because you were already in a situation where you kind of needed to have bouncers or something or some mechanism to limit how many people are in the store at a given time.
There are adjustments we did make for the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We have virtual queuing, so you can make a reservation in advance. And, again, we didn't know how chaotic the lines would be going up Broadway and down 48th Street. And that has helped a lot with the flow. Mobile order pickup, that's been huge. We have a window on the street, a takeout window or pickup window. And that's where you pick up your mobile order. So, more than double what we do in an average shop in terms of percentages are done through mobile order. So, and I'd say that's how we were able to kind of hit our record is, we could only have a certain amount of traffic inside the shop. Mm-hmm. But then when we have this walk-up window that, where we're selling OGs and coffee, but also delivering pickup, delivering mobile orders, that was kind of a great add to what we've done. So, you know, inline queuing inside, there's a lot of subtle technologies that we have used to do line management. And we'll continue to optimize.
Is there kind of dispatch and recognition on that, like order 125 or customer 125, you can come in now? Is that just done by text messaging, or are you doing anything on screens?
It is. There's push messaging that'll tell you where you are in line, and then it'll tell you you're third in line, and then it tell you to, you know, how long until, you know, you need to be at the front door. So the virtual queuing, definitely a work in progress. The company we went with hadn't done anything quite so complex or customized. So I'd say the team that worked on that, which wasn't me, has done a great job of kind of making it work to our needs. That's helped, you know, people in line who have been waiting for minutes, if not hours. There doesn't seem to be this issue that somebody walking up right to the door who had a reservation. Mm-hmm. And before we opened on a Tuesday, and our reservations were booked for live viewing right through Saturday. So, you know, that gives a hint that we were in for a pretty busy week.
Wow. Yep. So last question, engagement and experience are terms that get tossed around a lot and kind of lose their value in certain respects. How do you define experience when it comes to this place?
Where to go with this? You know, so much of what our marketing team does, they almost police us, is to make sure we're on brand. So we had to be on brand color-wise and with messaging. And yet we wanted to really push the envelope and make a huge statement and have people feel like they were coming to a flagship shop, right? Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, anticipating international travelers who, or our lifelong fans, when they know there's a Krispy Kreme in Times Square, just like there's an M&M store or what have you, they're going to want to go. And our experience, not just buying donuts, but getting to the donut case and being in the room, has to feel like you've arrived somewhere. And, you know, I think we have. It's, you know, our general contractor had a great line in that, you know, he doesn't think there'll be another shop like this for a few years that has put so much into it, that has tried so hard to please its fans, its customers, as we have. And, you know, we've got 3 racks worth of technology. It was, you know, he, you know, technologically, he'd not handled anything that was this complex, but also, you know, in the front of house with customers, he just felt like there was so much eye candy, so much to see and do while you're in the shop. And he's done a lot of doors in Times Square, felt like, you know, we had hit it out of the park. So, you know, anecdotally, you know, we just from word of mouth or reactions, we think we've done it.
All right. Todd, thank you so much for spending some time with me. I appreciate it. That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.